This is Jim Inkster. Thanks for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing, signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. We begin with Mary Stein of the East Baton Rouge Parish Library. She's the assistant director. Mary and I went to school at LSU a generation or two ago, and she has been where she is for 39 years, and largely because of Mary and many others, but she, of course, has been in high places in the system. The East Baton Rouge Parish Library is one of the great entities in America. 335,000 people in East Baton Rouge Parish have library cards. That's 74% of the population, and that includes men, women, children, everybody. And in the last 12 weeks, over 100,000 people have used their library card.
That's right.
And, you know, I interview book authors, and I read at least portions of a lot of books. And occasionally I go to the library. But that punk who robbed me in the park not so long ago, he took my library card when he took my wallet. So, Mary, can you get me a library card?
I will hook you up.
Give me a new card.
That's right.
Can it be gold-plated?
Maybe platinum. For you, because you're a reader. And let's hope that that gentleman who robbed you gets his own card.
Well, I think he really ought to have a few more years on his sentence for taking my library card. That's about as cold as it gets.
It's cold.
Yeah, cold, heartless world. Mm-hmm. But you live in a world where people, I can't think of a better place to be than a library.
I think
so. Because people are going there searching for information. They're curious about the world.
That's right.
Their minds are open. That's what the world's all about. It's kind of like hosting this show. I get to talk with interesting people like you. But you're smiling, and I'm not being facetious.
Well, I believe in the mission, Jim. It's all about discovery. It's all about sharing. In fact, we've just rolled out our new strategic plan, and the mission statement is, and the vision statement, you know, they talk about sharing. It's all about discovery and sharing access, products, services, resources, so that you can have a better life.
And reading, of course, opens us to new places, to
it
new
does.
Ideas, and perhaps ideas that may change the way we think.
And provides a common point for discussion. Even if you're on different sides of an issue, you can meet on the pages of a book and have a civil conversation.
All right. 877-217-5757 and talk@talklouisiana.org. And already an email from Tom on Bluebonnet asking how can Baton Rouge, a city that is known for having challenges with education and literacy, have such a high population who are readers and go to the library? How is that possible?
Well, it's because we offer more than just books. We offer programs. We offer lifelong learning opportunities for those who are not literate, who are struggling. We offer skills training and skills development. And then we try to get at the root of the problem with early literacy programs for parents from all and caregivers from all walks of life. And to do that, either you're coming to us or the bookmobile is going to you. Daycares, 2,000 daycares visits in the last year. So it's a multiple prong attack. And people do come to the library, even if they're not strong readers. Maybe they devour a book through an audiobook, and we don't judge. You know, if you want to listen to the book, you go ahead on.
All right. Here's Billy in Broadmoor asking, how many newspapers and magazines have you digitized from a local perspective?
So we ourselves digitized The Advocate going back to the 1820s, I believe. And we also have the Times Pick all the way back. And you can get to those from your phone, from your house, or, of course, from the library itself.
With your card.
With your library card. That is that all-access pass. We've also digitized such things as Gregory, and we're trying to digitize the Tiger Rag and Country Roads. We just need, because
you have Gregory?
Yes, we have Gregory.
It's fun.
Every page, including the ads, and it's just a time capsule there of Baton Rouge history, isn't it?
Well, that was John McGinnis, who was one of the greats, and I think of John often. I know his protege, who's doing very well, Mr. Alford, is doing fine work, and John would be quite proud of him, but it was, it's been a few years since he died, but his birthday coming up. He would be 75 in March 17th, I believe. So we'll have to salute John McGinnis on that day. 877-217-5757. Kevin in North Baton Rouge, you are on with Mary Stein. Hi, Kevin.
Well, how you doing? I wanted to know how the people was doing with the Black History books. Are they checking out more Black History books now today because they having this critical race theory and really telling the truth about the real history, even though it hurts some?
That is indeed. We do curated lists either in our Overdrive Digital platform and in physical shape in our physical libraries, whether it's the main library or Scotlandville or Delmont or Bluebonnet. People, our staff vary. It's not always the same display, but we'll do a curated list, and we have curated pathfinders online, and we even have the Pass It Down Civil Rights digital exhibit. We have the oral histories, and people are discovering those and using those in their own conversations and in their own planning. So yes, people are interested in these topics, and they're interested at every age. And they're interested whether they're bringing it to their church social concerns committee or for their private enjoyment and discernment.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have how many locations in the
14
parish?
14 current locations, and then the bookmobile fleet goes out and about.
All right. Well, question from a listener, and this is a good one because we have some locations that are not so far from others, and this is Tracy at the Capitol asking about how the downtown location, which is beautiful, has that in any way taken traffic away from the Terrace location, which isn't so far
away? No, not really. As we open a branch or renovate a branch, we find that we basically bulk up in people visiting, but it's not grabbing people from another branch. Now, it's possible when the new South branch is constructed that it will draw some people away from Bluebonnet, because with library locations, it's not just where people live, it's where they go. So it's very possible that because of traffic routes, the new South branch will pull traffic away from Bluebonnet and possibly even the main library. But generally what happens is you get an uptick anyway of fresh people whenever you open or renovate a branch, and it's a happy, happy day.
877-217-5757. There is still time to reach Mary Stein, the assistant director of the East Baton Rouge Parish Library, and she is close to 40 years. She has logged almost her entire professional career devoted to people and books in this community, by way of Louisiana State University. I used to see her at, I think it was Pentagon Cafeteria.
Oh, yes, yeah, yes.
Late 70s, early 80s.
That's right. I was working the early shift or the late shift.
Jim downtown. Jim, you're on.
Hey, listen to WRKF. I heard about the LinkedIn learning opportunities, and I just wanted to thank you so much. I tell my colleagues, employees, everybody, you can get some great training courses for free through that.
That's right. You know, there are some businesses and nonprofits that even design the continuing ed for their staff based on what we offer freely to you with your library card through LinkedIn Learning, Gale Courses, Udemy, and there's even a few others that are out there. Our newest one, so exciting, is AR and VR, using augmented reality and virtual reality for trades training in everything from HVAC to electrical to plumbing. I'm very excited about that one.
Claudia on Segan. Hi, Claudia. You're on with Mary Stein.
Thank you. I just joined listening, and I'm not sure what came before, but I just wanted to say how much I personally appreciate the service that the library offers for curbside delivery. I have some limited mobility with walking, and it really is a blessing to be able to, you know, call and get a book, have it picked up, and just wanted to say thank you so much for this seemingly simple service, but is very much appreciated.
You're very welcome. That's one of the things, you know, a little COVID lemonade there. We have the drive-through, of course, at the main library, which is used, you know, 1,000 times a month, and we have a drive-through at Fairwood, but the other branches aren't situated such that we could do that. But something as simple as, hey, bring it to me. It's so simple. And if it makes it easy for you, that's what we want.
Thank you, Claudia. That's a great story. David on Bluebonnet. David, you're on with Mary. Hi, David.
Yeah, hi, Mary. I was wondering, have the 3D printing capabilities been restored at the main library?
Yes. And you were also doing 3D printing at a number of locations, Bluebonnet, River Center, I think Greenwell Springs and Jones Creek as well. So if you are sending in your object to be printed, regardless of where we print it, I think that's back online. For a while, we had a difficulty, I want to say, getting the PLA, getting the stuff, you know, supply mm-hmm. chains. Books have been delayed, believe it or not. There's issues with paper and printing. And then our sweet little 3D printer with that PLA, that plastic thread.
877-217-5757. A few more minutes with Mary Stein when we return on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. In a few minutes, we'll hear from Mark Ballard. But it's always a pleasure to catch up with Mary Stein. And it is one of the true treasures in our community, as noted when we started today. In East Baton Rouge Parish, 335,000 people have library cards. That's 74% of the population. And it's by far the highest percentage of any parish in Louisiana. It's not only because the library is promoted well, but it's also because our population is one of the most enlightened in all of Louisiana, if not the United States of America. And several listeners, noting that you were coming on, asked me, and it's a legitimate, Attorney General Jeff Landry. And I must say, based on what he has done, I think he is sincere, but of course some people believe he's off base, and it is something that is worthy of comment. He's created an online tip line to report books found in libraries that residents think are inappropriate to stop what he calls the taxpayer-subsidized sexualization of children. What are your thoughts, Mary Stein?
Well, our library system has a process when people want books or when people want to discuss why we have books. And this is the same process we've had for years and years and years. And over my four decades almost, yes, there have been books where someone thought it was inappropriate for maybe a certain age group or for the library as a whole. My most recent official challenge was because the books featured guns. It had nothing to do with a sex education or a story where the teenagers or the adults were sexually active. So our viewpoint is, let's provide the books that our patrons want, make sure they're in the right age group, and make sure that we have special books pulled out for the parenting shelf mm-hmm. that especially talk about sensitive topics, tough topics, where the parent wants to have a teachable moment with the child, and then give the parent the right to choose what's appropriate for their family. Because they can't choose what's appropriate for your family or mine. Mm-hmm. They can only pay attention to what their children are doing and share that time with them. That's when everybody wins.
It is a treacherous slope. I think we agree on that. And what was the dust-up about guns?
The magazines had the semi-automatic guns on the cover. And they were so visible, and it was disturbing to the family with the children coming in.
Right, because so what did you do?
Well, we did keep them. That is the nature of that particular magazine. We looked at the location of it, and was it on the way into the children's room? Was it the one that, you know, when you go to the grocery store and there's stuff right at the counter? It's kind of like clickbait in a store. You think about where it's located. And if we were housing these magazines right next to the children's room, that would have not been the okay. good thing. So let's move them where they're not so visible.
All right. As you can imagine, I'm getting a lot of comments, but here's one from a man I respect and admire, Les Landon, who worked for many years for the Louisiana Federation of Teachers. He said, read banned books. You might find out things about yourself that you did not know, which is why they were banned in the first place. But it does appear that the focus is on LGBTQ literature. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be an easy target for some people, politicians in general. And as I stated, I don't know what their motivations are, because I don't think this plays well with the overall public, but it plays well with a certain percentage of the public. So how do you get the politics out of this, or can you?
Well, again, we have a process, and if somebody objects to the fact that there may be whatever in a book, we first ask them, did you read it? And what do you think is incorrect or wrong about this book? Is it that you think it's in the wrong age appropriate? Then we go back and we look at our reviews. Why did we buy it in the first place? Is it well reviewed? Does it seem to be cited in the right collection for the age? And generally, unless it's, well, I've never pulled a book. Mm-hmm. I've moved a book to a parenting collection, and we've moved a book from children's to teens, and we've moved books from teens to adults. But it just depends on how the, if the book was well written and well researched and seems to offer something to some readers, we're going to want to keep it.
Well, and now with these phones, of course, you can get information and visual images on a phone far more readily than in a library. So it would seem in some cases to be an issue of the past rather than the present, because there are far more dangerous places to be than a library if you're seeking a prurient information.
YouTube, TikTok, it's all there. You know, that's why you should be with your child when they're using digital products. And you should also be with your child when they're using printed products.
877-217-5757. As mentioned, the always capable and erudite Mark Ballard is on deck. But our guest for a few more moments is Mary Stein, 39 years at the East Baton Rouge Parish Library. And I mentioned, this is a story that I think should be shouted from the rooftops. 335,000 people in this parish have library cards. That's men, women, and children, 74% of the population. Donna in Capitol Heights. Donna, good morning.
Hi. I was wondering, how long does it take for a new book to reach the library? For example, Harry's new book, Bear. Thank you.
So it's going to depend on how we purchase the book. If the book was pre-announced through our review journals so that we could create a ordering cart through our distributors, because we generally work with major book distributors that focus on doing or filling orders for libraries. So if the book is not a surprise and it's been announced 6 weeks or even 3 months or 6 months ahead of time and we've carted it, then it's just a matter of fulfillment. And depending on the book, the day it drops in a bookstore is the day it drops in a library, because we've gotten them pre-processed so that the minute we get them off the truck, once the open street date comes, because we can't, we're morally bound, ethically bound, not to release them ahead of their street date, as much as we might want to, we release them that day, and then they work their way out. Now, sometimes we have issues because authors change their minds, the titles change, as I mentioned before, there's been huge delays because of paper and publishing, and our major publishers are all struggling with their due dates, as it will, of publishing. Well, Jim knows that more than anyone.
That's correct. It's an adventure that is not pleasant at times right now for people in the publishing industry. Now, we will talk, I'm sure, at least I hope, with Mary during the year. There are always a number of events at the library. And is there anything in the near term that you'd like to mention?
Yes. Well, Abraham Lincoln's coming in a week or two, and we're doing all kinds of wonderful things with scientists, with astrology, and we're going underwater to see what those Mayan ruins are. We're doing garden discoveries. Mm-hmm. But you'll hear it first right now, Jim. Our One Book, One Community is going to be announced February 1st. But just for your listeners, I'm going to tell you, we're going to go to the blues, Baton Rouge is going to have the blues this spring.
That's going to be the one book?
Yes.
That's our buddy Chris Thomas King,
yes,
isn't
Chris
it?
Thomas King and the blues, the authentic narrative
well, thank
of my
you
music
for breaking
and culture.
News on our show.
Yes. And then we'll do some companion
Tabby's,
books.
Tabby's son.
Yes. Companion books from Blues from the Bayou and John Wirt's book. So it's going to be a musical
okay,
spring.
So it's going to be the blues at the library.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Barbara asks, how many copies will you have of Spare? People are juiced up about this book. They can't get enough of gossip. Imagine that.
Yes. Well,
royal gossip.
Right. With it, with all the other books like that, we generally order a lot of books and we'll have it probably on our lanyard desk at the main library. Those are the non-reservable ones. And then we're getting it in where we may get 50 copies or even more. And online, we'll probably turn on the feature where we don't have just 5 copies, but we have licensed copies. So as many people want
right.
it, they'll...
Thank you, Mary Stein. Great job. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being part of our show. And if you're so inclined, give us a call at 877-217-5757 or send emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. Robin Dow's producing, and always a privilege to talk with Mark Mallard, who's now perched in the Beltway, where he's reporting on Louisiana and national politics. And as we know, they often intersect, and a tragedy. Karen Carter Peterson, who was a stalwart in the Louisiana Senate, head of the Democratic Party. Yesterday, she was sentenced to prison for 22 months, as Gordon Russell reports in today's Advocate, capping a dramatic fall from grace. Longtime Senator Karen Carter Peterson was sentenced to 22 months in federal prison for taking more than $140,000 from the state Democratic Party's coffers and from her own campaign account to gamble at casinos. The 53-year-old Peterson will surrender to the Federal Bureau of Prisons on March 6. She's a member of a prominent New Orleans political family. Her father, Ken, was the founder of the Bold Political Organization and assessor. And Peterson logged more than 22 years in the legislature representing Uptown and served as chair of the party from 2013 to 2020. And there is an amazing juxtaposition at the Democratic Party, because Buddy Leach, who was chair before her, the late Buddy Leach, he contributed mightily from his own personal funds to the party. And as we can tell, Karen Carter Peterson was stealing from the Democratic Party. Mark Ballard, did she get what she deserved?
Well, I don't know if that's true or not, but when you are accused, convicted, and plead guilty in the, to such a crime, then, yeah, you need to be, in my mind, you need to be paying the piper, just as you and I would do if we were in a similar situation. So I think it ends up being fair.
She had a gambling addiction, and there are many who in our world do. And that's one of the unreported stories in our community, is that with this accessibility to all kinds of gambling for people who have that predisposition, they're really they're tantalized all the time, aren't they?
Yeah, it's like alcohol and drugs. I mean, these are things that can become addictive, and there needs to be more, I guess, you know, emphasis on dealing with the addiction. But that does not negate or mitigate, well, maybe mitigate, but it does not negate crimes that you commit in furtherance of your addiction. And
well,
I think that's what we saw.
Yeah, and she's no different than any other citizen. And I think if somebody else had done this, they would have received a comparable prison sentence. But 22 months is an investment in time that is substantial. So we hope she does well. But it is tragic, because this is a person who was immensely popular,
yes,
was productive, talented, at one point came very close to being elected to Congress. She had the world, as they say, in her palm, but she let it go.
Well, I think that does kind of tell the story of addiction. What people don't realize is that she was a leading voice for progressive politics in Louisiana, of which there are very few voices of. And that's something that is important to remember. And her father was a major seminal politician in New Orleans. And so, I mean, this is something that we need to remember, that not all of our heroes turn out to be, you know, golden all the time.
We all have feet of clay. 877-217-5757 is your number. And since we last joined Mark, Kevin McCarthy, who was named Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, he received 216 votes, which isn't a majority of the House. Several members had to vote present in order for him to get a majority of those who voted, which enabled him to become Speaker. But to put it in perspective, Hakeem Jeffries, the Democrat, who is the House Minority Leader, he got 212 votes. So if they'd kept doing that...
Every single time, too. Every single time they voted, he got 212.
Total union, united front from the Democratic Party. And the guy who was waiting in the wings, and to his credit, he didn't stab his friend in the back, Steve Scalise, stood beside McCarthy, who's his buddy, and they're both acolytes of Donald Trump. And Scalise is now the number two guy, and of course, he is, as they say, a heartbeat away from the Speaker's office, and he is a guy who's made a meteoric rise in Louisiana politics, was not thought of when he was in the legislature, the state legislature, as one of the up-and-comers, but he has shown them, and my goodness, has he ever shown them. He has a great personal skill. He is very good at retail politics. He's a guy, I would compare him a lot to Garrett Graves. He's a personable guy, and because of that, that goes a long way in politics. But when it comes to things like the George Santos scandal, this guy in New York who lied about everything, I mean everything. There's nothing he told the truth about. And now Republicans in his own state, four congressmen are urging him to quit, but Scalise's response was, we're going to sit down and talk to him. Well, it would seem that the prudent move by Majority Leader Scalise would be to say, let's get rid of the guy. Why is he so reticent on this front?
Well, McCarthy also said the same thing, and so he's pretty much following what Speaker McCarthy is saying about this issue. And I think some of the reticence has to do with how narrow the vote is, how narrow the majority is for the Republicans in the House. There's a good possibility that they rerun that election. This is a purple district in a basically blue area, and there could be a switch of parties, which would make the majority even narrower and more problematic for the Speaker and his majority leader.
It's all about keeping the seat, and right now Republicans hold the U.S. House by the thinnest of margins, 222, and 218 is a majority, so every seat is precious, and George Santos was elected. But I just find it unfathomable that there wasn't opposition research that would have exposed this guy. The Democrats, they have to be in some ways culpable on this, too. I'm sure they had, he barely won his race. Why in the world didn't they find out this stuff about him, Mark Bauer?
Well, that's a good point. But the Republicans cleared the way for Mr. Santos, basically making sure that there was no opponents in there and that he would be, you know, the Republican nomination. And maybe that has something to do with it as well. I mean, because that kind of stuff usually comes up from someone in your own party who knows better. But you're right. I mean, it should have come up in opposition research, and I'm kind of shocked that it did not.
And I must say, in Louisiana, we play politics pretty well in our state. We're good at it because we like it, and it's a big part of the fabric of our life. And I think if this guy had run in Louisiana with all of these, they weren't even skeletons. I mean, they're just an open view that he was a fraud. We would have known about it. Tim and Thibodeau, good morning, Tim. You're on with Mark Ballard.
Thanks very much, Jim. Listen, Scalise bothers me because it came up again when he was possible nominee for the House and everything, and that quote did come up again about being just like David Duke without the baggage. I was at LSU when Duke spoke, and I have real reservations about anybody claiming to be close to Duke. Thank you.
Well, and he spoke at this white nationalist convention at the hotel that is now Copeland Tower. I think it used to be called the Landmark. Scalise was welcomed and treated royally by the Dukesters. But he was representing a very conservative district, and if, on issues. Now, I don't think Scalise is a Klansman by any means, and I doubt very seriously that he is what we would call a traditional racist. But on the issues, he was right there in Duke's camp, Mark Ballard.
Yeah, they do share, and President Trump as well shares very similar political views, not racial views, but political views, that is true. Mm-hmm. To be fair to Mr. Scalise, the story that came out was that while the white nationalist group had rented the ballroom for an evening, that they let Scalise use it for a kind of town hall for the district. And so same room, different times, different audiences, at least that's what the Scalise side says.
Steve Scalise, he went to Louisiana State University, and he still is in line. Kevin McCarthy, I would think, is in a tenuous path as the Speaker of the House. And to show Scalise's political persuasion because of his personality, which I think on the whole he's a nice guy, and he's legitimately a nice fellow. He's not an act. Years ago, Mark, I was asked to speak to the Pachyderms in New Orleans. We met at a Chinese restaurant on Carrollton, Five Happiness, I think that's the name of it. But anyway, it's 2007. And I was an emergency backup for Bobby Jindal, who was running for governor and couldn't show. And they called me and said, can you come? And I said, sure, I'd be honored. So I show up, and I'm giving my repertoire of jokes about Edwin Edwards and Bill Clinton. And it's like, ha, 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 ha. And then I started telling jokes about David Vitter, and I cleared the room. I cleared the room. There were 200 people, and by the time I finished, and I would not stop, there were about five people, and one of them who stayed was none other than Steve Scalise. And I sat down beside him. I said, thanks for staying. And he goes, you're not so bad, Jim. Roger Villery gave me an unbelievable look as he made a big scene and left the room because I was assaulting David Bruce Vitter. And I think all of them were afraid that they were going to be reported to Vitter that they stayed while I was telling jokes about Vitter. But Scalise stayed. So I've always had a soft spot in my heart for the now number two person in the U.S. House of Representatives, Steve Scalise. We're going to talk more with Mark Ballard, and we also get his take on the governor's election. There are going to be some announcements coming soon and very soon. 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. Thanks for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow at the controls, your number 877-217-5757. And Mark Ballard is with us, and we're 9 months and 2 days away from the governor's election. Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yes, good morning. Isn't Scalise's behavior just totally consistent in pandering to the right-wing Trumpist elements? I mean, even after he was shot, he still can't stand up to the NRA.
Is that because the NRA is a powerful political force, or is it because he truly believes in Second Amendment rights to a wider degree than most Americans do? He did take a bullet. I think we got to give him a pass on the gun stuff. He almost died. Mark Ballard and he is a heroic figure in the. I don't know if people realize when you look at him now, he looks hale and hearty, but he was near the end when he got shot.
Yes, I mean, that certainly has made him more of a national figure, is getting shot and surviving and then progressing as he's done. And I think that's something that we can all be proud of and look to as a way to go in that. Now, whether or not I'm assuming, because he says so, that he is a huge supporter of gun rights, but it's also true what the caller mentions, is that the NRA is just a huge well of cash, and to get to where he is, just like Mr. McCarthy, he has to raise a lot of money and spread it out among Republicans, and the NRA helps with that.
Well, tomorrow on this show, we should have Sharon Hewitt as a guest, and I think she will be announcing her candidacy for governor. Mark, the governor's race is taking an interesting turn because a lot of heavyweights, Cassidy and Kennedy, and they've decided not to run. And that means that the field is wide open. Your thoughts?
Well, she's been flirting with it for quite some time. I think she's looking at it as Senator Hewitt is looking at it as being, you know, a Republican conservative who is practical, but also a woman. And that really hasn't been, there haven't been too many of those kind of candidates before. And that sets her apart from, you know, Jeff Landry and John Schroeder and whoever else will drop into the race. So she does have a unique path and a possible path, because we did, after all, elect a woman governor who was a Democrat.
Well, and the field is such that a surprise could happen. Senator Hewitt will be, if things go according to plan, with us tomorrow, and it's not a very well-kept secret. I think she's running for governor. And then next week, another candidate who is asked not to be mentioned and is so secretive about this. I just got an email. This is the most unusual email I've had in a while, from a guy who says he's running for governor, but doesn't want to tell me who he is, but will be in studio next week to announce it. And I don't know who it is, but it could be Richard Nelson. That would be my guess, but I don't know. But Nelson's an interesting fellow, isn't he?
It could be Garrett Graves. Yes,
I don't think Garrett. Well, Garrett's not going to do it that way. If he runs, there are going to be balloons and cannons, and we're going to have a big coming out for Garrett Graves. It's not going to be. Although I'd love it if he came on this show, but I think he'll make it'll be a 7-gun salute. It'll be an impressive show of force if Congressman Graves runs. But this is fascinating. 9 months out.
Announcing on your show seems to be the first station that you need to do to win governorship. But Graves this week, he was very much involved in helping McCarthy get elected Speaker of the House. Yet he has been ducking every single chance to speak, with the exception of sending out a statement yesterday about the FAA's little problem with its kerfuffle with its systems. He otherwise has been, you know, ducking reporters, not just me, but all kinds of reporters. So I don't know what that means.
Mm-hmm. There were rumors, and these sound like rumors, as Pat Paulson used to say, rumors of the worst kind, true rumors. But in this case, it might be of the best kind, that despite what he said on this show just a few weeks ago, Jay Darden, now that everybody's pulling out, is taking a look at it. He would be a formidable guy if he got in, wouldn't he?
I think he would, at least for moderate Republicans and Democrats. I think he would be that would be his avenue in there. But there is a significant percentage of Republicans that would just, you know, hate him for, you know, even smiling at John Bel Edwards. And so that would be, he would probably have high negatives for that. But hopefully that moderates are on the increase in Louisiana.
Charlotte in New Iberia. Hello, Charlotte. You're on with Mark.
Good morning to you all. I'm calling to ask whether the funds that come from foreign members of the NRA are separated and not used for donations in campaigns. Thank you.
I have no clue if that's true or not.
All right. David in Atlanta. Hello, David.
Good morning, gentlemen. Mr. Ballot, if there's a rematch in the 2024 election for president between Trump and Biden, and if the Republican House of Representatives refuses to certify the election, what would happen? Would the vote go to the House, or would there be a Supreme Court challenge?
It's hard to say, but I mean, the Constitution does revert the basic ties to the House.
Right, and that's how Thomas Jefferson beat Aaron Burr in 1800. It was a tie vote, and Jefferson was named president of the United States. Now, the Biden-Trump potential match in 2 years, actually, it's 1 year. Think about that. We're 1 year away from primaries and caucuses. But classified files found its second site linked to Biden. Joe Biden, it appears, is cooperating, unlike Donald Trump, in the investigation. But this doesn't shed very good light on him, and it basically takes that issue off the table. And perhaps they both may be under indictment for taking classified documents to places they shouldn't have. Your thoughts, Mark Ballard?
Well, they are a little bit different in that the Trump denied, and Biden is the one that turned over the documents. I mean, he was the one that informed the authorities that he had those documents. But yeah, I think that there's a real issue here of you know, people, our leadership's taking cavalierly these documents that are top secret for a reason, you know, and mm-hmm. and then just kind of hanging them around. And if you ask for them under a Freedom of Information Act, you know, they get all uptight about that, and you know, so that kind of undermines the whole talk about transparency when they take those documents that are top secret home with them versus, you know, releasing them to the public.
Front page story in the New York Times. In fact, they're for the people who say the New York Times, which is the national newspaper of record, if they're in the tank for Joe Biden, it doesn't show it today. Here's one story. Above the fold, classified files found at second site. The other, the tale of Hunter Biden to come front and center. And here's the third. GOP sees several avenues in investigating the president. The story from Luke Broadwater starts this way. With Washington in a state of divided government, newly empowered House Republicans are all but certain to be unable to enact their legislative agenda into law. Instead, they have made it clear that their primary mission in the 118th Congress will be investigating the Biden administration, including inquiries they say that could lead to the potential impeachment of President Biden and several cabinet members. So there we are. Is this payback for the Trump years, Mark Ballard?
I think so. It's also an indication of how polarized we've become in this country on the, you know, that Biden can't do anything right, just as Democrats felt like Trump couldn't do anything right and therefore needs to be thrown out. I think we're going to see the Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas be the first impeachment hearings that will come around, but I would not be surprised to see President Biden also be the target of an impeachment inquiry.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hello, Phil.
Hello, Jim. Hello, Mark. Okay, picture this. This will be surefire. Let's have Robert De Niro and Bernie Sanders have a wrestling match, tag team, worldwide wrestling with
With
Trump, with Trump, and oh hell, I lost his name.
Well, Phil, be careful about the profanity, Phil. We don't want to put you in a penalty box.
I'm not making any profanity. Tag team wrestling. Robert De Niro offered to punch out Trump, and
he did. Please, but De Niro is pushing 80. So is Trump, and Bernie's past 80. I think we'd have to bring defibrillators with us if that were to occur.
Imagine it. Come on.
But I know. Trump is the only president in the World Wrestling Entertainment Hall of Fame. So, yeah, there we go. Bill Huey. Steve Scalise writes, Mr. Huey is a complete opportunist. he says he would get close to a Komodo dragon if he thought there was something in it for him. And it's the five happiness on Carrollton, he writes. Yeah, I got it right. So, Scalise, come on. If he's Speaker of the House, that would help Louisiana. So it still could happen. And, Mark, we should have an interesting week, and we'll be calling again next Thursday. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you. Have a nice weekend.
You too. Thank you, Mark. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support for Talk Louisiana. Until next time, as in tomorrow, I'm Jim Inkster. Stay safe and stay tuned.